Item 12, Willapaw Bay Salmon Management Policy. This is a briefing with a public hearing. Steve Thiesfeld.
Unsworth, Deputy Director Store. I'm Steve Thiesfeld. I'm the Region 6 Fish Program Manager. I'm here this morning to brief you on the Willapa Bay Salmon Policy Development and where we are in the process, and hopefully seek some guidance for where to go in the near future. So today we'll brief you on the process. We'll report on the feedback from the draft policy that we released to the public about a month ago now, and seek your input on any enhancements that you might desire to the policy for releasing another draft for additional public review. Our schedule for the day, or our outline, will review the development schedule, remind you of the key policy issues, summarize the comments that we heard from the public, provide some brief analyses of the suggestions from the public, and suggest some ways that the policy might be improved, and then seek your guidance for where to go from here. Our policy development schedule, we started this back in November. I, for one, am ready to be done. And we briefed you on some initial sideboards. The commission gave us some direction and some sideboards, some aspirational objectives to move forward with. We met in December and briefed you on our process, the discussions that we had had with the public and our ad hoc committee. January, we brought to you a draft policy for your consideration. That policy was released to the public for their comments. It was out for approximately 3 weeks, and we are here today to summarize that comment, try to provide you some thoughts about what the public is telling us, and seeking your guidance. We've had a lengthy public involvement in this development of this policy. The only new meeting that we've had since we last met here with you folks was we did have a public workshop in the week following our last meeting with you. That's the January 17th public workshop. But I do know the way to Raymond from Montesano now quite well. Just a short reminder of the mandate and existing guidance for the department. Preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage the fish and wildlife resources of the state. Our first and foremost mandate, and within the conservation constraints, maintain the economic well-being and stability of the recreational and commercial fishing industries in the state. Would also like to remind you of your budget policy that you've passed, asking us to compare the economic benefits in policy and budget decisions, and that we should be promoting selective fisheries and sharing the cost of management for fisheries and hatchery production. With that all, we've done some preliminary analyses of costs that we'll get to. Reminder of the basin. Commercial fisheries are very important to Pacific County. They have about somewhere between $40 and $80 million worth of ex-vessel value coming from commercial fisheries of all types within the county, a very important driver to the economy there. Salmon, specific to Willapa Bay, are a small part of that, but an important part. In 2012, we had about $800,000 of ex-vessel value and about $650,000 in 2013, and perhaps close to $1 million in 2014. So a very important part of the local economy in Pacific County specifically. At the same time, the recreational fisheries in Willapa Bay are very important also. And as you can see, we're on an upward trend in terms of the economic impact that they bring to the state of Washington, reaching a peak there in about 2011 or 12 of over $4 million of economic benefit coming from the recreational fisheries. The cost of doing business for us in Willapa Bay, we've done some preliminary analyses trying to get our hands wrapped around this one. And we're showing you here the cost of our regional program. It does not include our fixed costs here in the Olympia office, such as our coded wire tag lab, our fish ticket processing, catch record cards, genetics labs, things that are built in and support many other fisheries other than Willapa Bay. But in terms of just what does it cost for us to manage these fisheries annually, we've appropriated the costs based on the catch of fish, the distribution between the two sectors. And it's about close to a little more than $700,000 on the commercial side, and just a skosh down there on the recreational side. And you can see that the funding source for paying for our management and hatchery production in the bay is primarily general fund state. There's a small bit of wildlife and DJ in there that support spawner surveys, but for the most part, this is a general fund funded program down in the bay.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I'd just like to point out that this year there is a bill in the legislature, kind of at the and it was spearheaded by the department as a way to direct money from commercial license renewal fees and then direct those to the wildlife account. And so right now there's an amended bill which basically calls for the doubling of every commercial license fee with the idea to address this issue that we've heard the director and the former director Anderson. So I just want to kind of point that out, put that on the record. What happens to that ultimately? We'll see. I do know that there is broad support among the commercial salmon fleets to support, you know, some version of an increase of revenue to the department. So just want to make that point. Thanks.
Commissioner Wecker.
Yeah, I was wondering, Steve, do you have the number? You said around 700,000 for the commercial side. What was the sport number?
Okay. I'm going to look to my left here to Mr. Scott to see if he remembers the exact numbers that make up the graph there.
It's a little hard.
We'll dig that up for you, Commissioner Wecker.
About like 10,000, 20,000?
Yeah, I think it's a little higher than that, but we'll get those exact numbers for you before you leave here today. So,
and I'd kind of be interested in if this year that you have up there, is that 2014?
It's somewhat based on 2014, correct.
If that was typical or whether, you know, there's been any changes.
Well, we've certainly spent a lot of time on policy development this year that would not necessarily be reflected in this cost analysis, right? So it should represent a typical year of our North of Falcon process, our stock assessment, hatchery production. The largest portion of this is hatchery production.
Okay.
That's where the biggest part of the catch, or the expenses are.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions at this point? Go ahead, Steve.
So why do we need a salmon policy for Willapa Bay? We have some conservation concerns in the basin. We would like to enhance our focus on those. We want to try to restore and maintain our public trust. And we certainly need to clarify the sharing of impacts within the basin. The key issues, conservation and hatchery reform. Chinook salmon are routinely not meeting their escapement goals, and we have many more hatchery salmon up on the spawning grounds than we want to see. The conflicts of the various gear types in the fisheries. Transparency, we want to make sure that we're providing as much information as possible to the public to understand the decisions we're making. Monitoring and enforcement, we've got a selective fisheries in there that require additional monitoring, and we need to be ensure we're enforcing our regulations. And how do we respond in season when catches either are exceeding what we're expecting or perhaps it appears that the fish aren't there? The commission approved some aspirational objectives for us to try to achieve. These are goals that we think we might get to through this process. I'll just briefly try to remind you of those. For Chinook, we wanted to meet our nacelle and North River spawner goals in 10 years, essentially two brood cycles for Chinook salmon, and certainly meet our brood stock management under the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, the standards that come from there within 10 years. Coho, we are meeting our aggregate spawner goal, and the objectives suggest that we would continue to meet that goal, and we would continue to meet our brood stock management standards. Chum, we've been under escaped for a number of years. We've not met our spawning goals, and the aspirational objective suggests that we would try to do that by 2017 and meet our brood stock management standards by then also. On the fishery side, the objectives were to try to achieve a 25% increase in the recreational catch within 5 years relative to the average catch in 2009 through 2013. And for the commercial sector, the objective was to retain a $900,000 average ex-vessel value. And that's just about where they've been for the last 5 years. So trying to meet our conservation goals, our first priority, and if we can do that at the same time as providing a bump in the recreational catch and holding our commercial fisheries stable is what we went forward trying to achieve with this process. The guidance that the commission provided us, implement hatchery and fishery reform policy, use similar language as Gray's Harbor for transparency, monitoring, et cetera. Think long term. Recognize this is going to be difficult. So you asked us to consider evaluating priority for Chinook for the recreational community and Coho and Chum for commercial fishers. You asked us to evaluate prioritizing the north part of the bay, or the outer bay as we've called it, for recreational anglers, and the south part of the bay for commercial fishers. You also asked us to evaluate switching the primary Chinook population from Nacelle to Willapa River. You asked us to look at enhancing chum production through remote site incubators, on-station production, and water reuse systems. The draft policy that we provided you under Chinook management, it did prioritize recreational opportunity for Chinook in areas 2T and 2U through mid-September. Provided some opportunity for commercial fishing prior to that in the south part of the bay. Provided the commercial fisheries were essentially constrained by whatever impacts would be remaining after the recreational fisheries. And we provided some thoughts on how we would transition from a switch if we move the primary stock from Nacelle to Willapa, remembering that we would have a fair number of fish returning to the Willapa Basin, Chinook returning to the Willapa River, that we did not want up there, so we might have to provide some additional access to those fish so that we could begin down the path of rebuilding those wild stocks in that area. We provided you a number of graphs that looked like this, where we compared whether we were meeting our conservation and fishery objectives. This one happens to be Willapa trying to rebuild in a two brood cycle. We would time frame, we would have our goal met after 10 years. I recall we had the sport Chinook catch here. In this example, it was about 78% of the aspirational objective, and commercial was around 70. We met our brood stock and our Willapa spawners, the escapement goal there. And we showed you the difference between under current productions and if we increase production within the bay from about 7 million Chinook to 9.7 million Chinook. So there were a number of those graphs. We're not going to remind you of all of them. So there were five options that we evaluated, essentially primary for Willapa. My pointer's dying on me. I'll try this one. So primary in Willapa for the first four and retaining nacelle in option C. Again, you can see Chinook production was varied between 9.7 and our current production of 7 million. We had aggressive recovery and rapid recovery. Aggressive was the attaining our goals within 10 to 15 years, and rapid was our spawner escapement goals would be met in the 16 to 21 year period. The harvest rates were pretty stringent in all of these, much lower than where we've been in recent years. About 9% to make the 10 to 15 year goal and 14% to make a 16 to 21 year goal. And our achievement of our aspirational objectives on the recreational side, we were just short on all of them except the option C, the nacelle is primary. And similar result for the commercial fisheries, not quite to our aspirational objective, but we could actually meet it in aggregate for option C. And the start times that we had provided in the initial draft for 2T and 2U, all of them had September 15th. Other commercial areas would start after Labor Day. For coho management, the draft that went out for the public review suggests that we would continue to achieve our aggregate spawner goal. We've been making that goal consistently over the years, that we would continue to manage our hatchery brood stock to achieve the HSRG standards, and that we would prioritize the commercial opportunity for coho beginning mid-September through mid-October. For chum, we were suggesting that we needed to meet an aggregate spawner goal, that we would not have directed chum fishing if we weren't meeting that goal, and we would limit our impacts to 10% if the goal wasn't met. It did prioritize the commercial opportunities for chum during a chum management period, which is mid-October through the end of October, and that we would provide a report to the commission evaluating hatchery chum enhancement. Some additional analysis that we've conducted since we last met. This is commercial X vessel value. And over on the far right in red are these five options that we've already presented to you. So you can see the average commercial X vessel value is just around $900,000 for the last 5 years. And this is where each of the options would have us for X vessel value over the life of our modeling. And the first one is option A. Recall, option A and B are all Willapa's primary. So under this bar is with increased production, this one with current production, increased and current. The difference between the A's and the B's, A's were aggressive to 10 to 15 years meeting spawning goals, and B's, we are meeting the spawning goals in years 16 through 21. And under option C, we'd meet nacelle in 16 to 21 years. So the options that we've already presented to you do hold that commercial X vessel value near where we've been on average for the last 5 years. In terms of economic impact, the graph is very similar because it's simply a multiplier. The economic impact of the commercial fisheries would be, for any of these options, right around $2 million a year. For the recreational fisheries, the economic benefit is just under $4 million a year under most of the options and approaching $4.5 million a year under option C. So the draft policy with these five options was released on January 12th. I believe just a couple days after we met with you folks. We put it out for public review through January 29th. What did we hear? We had 25 written comments. Virtually all of those were email comments. Some of the comments represented groups of folks, so that it wasn't just 25 interested parties. We had many more than that. There were 8 public testimonies recorded at our January workshop in Raymond, and we had 17 comments submitted online. I've kind of summarized those into 10 categories. By far and away, the most contentious part of the policy is the allocation of the resource between the two sectors, the commercial and recreational sector, with 30 folks providing comments in that arena. Economics also was part of that allocation discussion. How does allocating fish between the sectors affect the economics of the area? 18 were centered around conservation concerns. Surprising to me, 13 of the comments were that we needed to liberalize the recreational regulations in the bay. 11 of the comments focused on hatcheries and perhaps more specifically hatchery surpluses. Great concern over what will happen if we have hatchery surpluses in the basin, and how is the legislature going to view us having a lot of fish back to the hatcheries. 7 on the Hatchery Scientific Review Group population designations. If you're counting, 6 folks suggested that Willapa should be primary and 3 suggested Nacelle, or 3 of the comments, I should say. Some of them, like I said, represented more than one person. 4 of the comments around enforcement and accountability, 3 on data rigor, 3 on alternative fishing practices, and communication and transparency, just a couple. And 9 various miscellaneous ones. On the conservation side, I was surprised. I don't know if we had a single comment that said that the proposed Chinook harvest rates were too high or too low. It seems like folks have come to grips with it's going to be about 9% if you want to do it fast and about 14% if you want to do it a little bit slower than that. Definitely heard that we should require in-season management and that we need to define those actions. What does in-season management mean? We had 2 views on this, folks that were concerned that we needed to ensure that we were truncating fisheries if we were exceeding preseason expectations, and then we also had folks that were suggesting that we needed to increase fisheries if there was an abundance of fish in the bay. A lot of concern over aggregate management of coho and chum. I think folks are just a little nervous. We've been managing that way for a number of years, but if we increase our focus on commercial priority of those species, how is that going to play out down the road? Are we going to continue to meet our goals in that arena? And some additional suggestions to continue to protect North River Chinook and perhaps even increase our protection of North River Chinook. Remind you that North River is the basin that's had the least amount of hatchery production over the years. And if we have a true wild stock, that might be the one. And a call for increasing our chum protection, perhaps not being quite as aggressive in our approach there, and maybe having some adaptive management tools that we might use if we're not achieving our escapement goals there. A call to address the habitat needs, always a difficult one in a policy for a Fish and Wildlife Agency to get to the habitat. And a theme that we've heard continually through our public process, a need to reduce pre-terminal interceptions, working with the Pacific Fishery Management Council and Pacific Salmon Commission to try to continue to bring down Canadian and Alaskan interceptions. The Chinook population designation, this clearly was a concern for a number of folks. We had utilized the designations from the 2010 draft Willapa Bay Plan, And a number of folks had a lot of heartburn suggesting that the second or the first or second largest river in the basin should only be the stabilizing population. Recall that stabilizing is the lowest priority for conservation. You're willing to assume more risk for that, a little more hatchery influence. So the suggestion was that whichever of the two largest streams we don't choose for primary, rather than being a stabilizing population, should be a contributing population. That has a moderate level of conservation and protection from hatchery products, interbreeding with the wild fish. The corollary that goes with ratcheting up that protection, though, of course, is we would likely have to reduce our hatchery production significantly to get there. I've certainly heard from the commercial sector support for additional time in the early part of August, what we might call the late summer or dip-in fishery. They wanted us to know how critical that was to them and that it provided stability for their fisheries. We heard that they definitely wanted us to increase harvest when stocks were abundant and not allow a lot of fish to make it back to the hatcheries. They asked us to try to provide additional Chinook opportunity in the southern part of the bay and continually reminded us that, in their view, it's going to be difficult to provide additional opportunity for the recreational community because the seasons are already, in their mind, maxed out or they're already open many months and there's not much room to provide more opportunity. Support for the recreational fishery, concern that the sharing of the impacts has favored the commercial side through history and that the recreational impacts should be increased, reminded us of the significant economic value of the sport fishery, the negative impact that the commercial fishing can have on catch rates, especially in 2T and 2U, the outer, upper, northern part of the bay. Concern that there wasn't enough protection in the policy for the freshwater fisheries. Were we able to pass through enough fish so that the freshwater catch rates could be high? Again, this idea that there were just too many restrictions on the recreational fishery, that we could liberalize bag limits, open up new areas, make it easier for them to catch fish. A concern that the draft does not explicitly provide direction on sharing of those impacts. And we had a number of suggestions on what, in their mind, an equitable sharing of those impacts might be. An alternative to that was to provide a defined full recreational season. In other words, craft out a what we might call a full recreational season and provide that up front before other impacts are utilized in the commercial sector. So we took a look at some more modeling, some more analysis, and we developed a proposal based on the comments of population designations. Recall this was the concern about whether one of the two major rivers should be contributing. It does provide that increased level of protection. Under this proposal that we crafted, you can achieve the goals for the aggregate of Coho and Chinook together. That's the harvest fishery objectives. But Chinook catch does decline in both sectors. You might recall a few minutes ago I said that we would have to reduce production in one of the systems if it was contributing. So we ran this analysis with Nacelle's primary and Willapa's contributing. And in all of our other proposals that we've looked at or options we've looked at with Nacelle's primary, we've had 3.3 million release out of the Forks Creek hatchery in the Willapa system. Under this one, we'd have to bring it down to, I believe, I'm getting foggy, about 550,000, give or take. So quite a reduction to get Willapa to meet its contributing standards for brood stock, the number of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds, and how much of the genetic material from the wild fish we're bringing into the hatchery. So You can see that for the sport catch, we're only up to about, say, 70%, maybe 75% of the Chinook, actually a little bit over on coho, and just under on the aggregate. Commercial Chinook catch goes way down under this alternative for Chinook. They do have a considerable coho catch, and in aggregate, they can make the ex-vessel value objective, but it relies heavily on coho and much less on Chinook. And our escapement goals for natural origin Chinook, just this would be for the Nacelle River, we'd just barely be above our spawning escapement goal. And this is in the 16 to 21 year period. This isn't the aggressive, this is the rapid. And coho, we would be about twice what our goals would be. There was also another proposal to explicitly define the sharing of impacts or mortalities for natural origin stocks. The proposal suggested that Chinook impact should be split equally between the recreational and commercial sectors. Coho 70-30 commercial to recreational, and chum 90% commercial, 10% rec. Remind you of where we've been with mortalities or impacts over the last 5 years. 90% of those impacts have gone to the commercial sector, and about 99% of the chum. 90 for Chinook and coho, and about 99% for chum. So we did evaluate this proposal also. This one was Willapa as a primary, Nacelle as a stabilizing. So this would resemble some of the proposals that we've already shared with you, except we've evened out the Chinook mortalities that could occur. Under this one, the recreational sector could theoretically achieve 100% of their impacts. It would be very difficult for us to actually provide that for them without going non-selective in fisheries. And I suspect that most of the folks that are wanting to talk about equal sharing of impacts do not want us to go to non-selective fisheries. Right, so the recreational fisheries just have a very low impact. So it would be very, very hard for us to drive them up to 50% of the Chinook impacts. So that's why I call this a theoretical. On the commercial side, we would not achieve the ex-vessel objective. Again, mostly coho, but quite a bit lower than what we have in some of the other options that we've shared with you. I suspect if some of these Chinook impacts over here on the recreational side weren't utilized and could be shared with the commercial sector, we could probably get that up a little bit.
I just have a quick question.
Commissioner Kehoe?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I just have a question about the 100%, you know, what the goal is. I know, so for commercial ex-vessel value, the goal or the, I don't know if it's the goal or whatever. The benchmark is $900,000. Okay. And then remind me, the sport catch, what's the...
is a 25% increase over what the five-year average is, or the last 5 years.
Okay.
So 125% of where we've been.
Okay, thanks.
Finally, we looked at a proposal based on providing additional early Chinook for the commercial sector. As I noted earlier, this concern was highlighted by the commercial comments, the folks commenting on the commercial fisheries. Provides that stability for them. So we examined a late summer, quote, dip-in fishery. It does achieve goals for the aggregates. However, Chinook catches are low for both sectors. Coho catch and the aggregate ex-vessel value is lower than in some other options that you've seen, but still does reach the goal. So this is what that proposal might look like. The sport sector is under on Chinook, over on coho. In aggregate, they would reach 125% catch. And the commercial sector does exceed for Coho and the aggregate ex vessel value, but Chinook is well below the goal.
Commissioner Wecker?
And would you define what the early Chinook option means in terms of the dip-in fishery?
We did 3.5 days in
three and a half days
in the first 2 weeks of August, and everywhere but 2U. So if let me go back up if I can. So this one had Willapa as primary. So if you went into 2U with that dip-in fishery, you would utilize so many impacts that there would be hardly any commercial fishing after that. So,
okay. Thanks.
So the 3.5 days is kind of where the controversial dip-in fishery has been for a number of years. So we have a number of suggestions on how we think the draft policy could be improved. Based on our analyses to date and our public feedback, we think it would be worthwhile to narrow the primary systems down to Willapa for Chinook and essentially table nacelle. Narrow the recovery period to the 4 brood cycle, the 16 to 21 years. We saw that the pain is fairly significant to do it in the 10 to 15 year period. Refine options for sharing. We could address and define what a recreational full fishery might be, and if we're the idea of providing that before the commercial impacts are accounted for. We could address concerns about early Chinook opportunity for commercial fishers, perhaps some alternatives that address both of those to be reviewed by the public. The concerns about the Chinook population designations, the policy could explicitly designate what we think those populations should be, provide the public an opportunity to comment on those designations now, not waiting. We could also consider providing opportunity for switching that second stream to a contributing stock in the future as our hatchery reform principles start to kick in. It would provide a bit of a transition and let us get there easily rather than coming down to about a 4 million production on Chinook level right away. So we're here in April. We've provided you our summary of the comments from the public. We'd like to seek guidance on whether there's a desire to modify the existing draft policy and send it back out to the public for additional review. Suggest that we might want to work with the Fish Committee to craft some changes to the policy and then get it out for the public. And then potentially, I know the next March meeting is in Moses Lake, and a desire to not have this discussion there, that the commission could consider adoption of a policy in April back here in Olympia.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Steve. We'll move on to the public input. Okay, many, if not all of you, have testified in front of the commission before. You know that we have a three-minute policy. At the end of the 3 minutes, you'll hear a beeper, and please end your immediate sentence, and we'll go on to the next person. I'm going to call you up two at a time, and we'll start off with Brian Kramer and Kurt Kramer.
Thanks for having me here today. Welcome, Mr. Unsworth, new director, and commission members. So there's a lot of issues that have come up, and new information that was just presented, but I think I'd like to start off by endorsing option C. If one takes just a casual cost-benefit analysis of that option, you will see that it's the option that maximizes both the recreational and commercial goals while not calling for an increase in hatchery production. This seems like an obvious win to me. But for some reason, we're considering switching the primary instead for lower thresholds on all those goals and increasing hatchery production. It just doesn't make sense. So unless I'm missing something, I think that's the obvious option we should be talking about, not the other three. Secondly, as far as conservation goals go, I think it's really worthwhile to evaluate what's going on with that North River stock. If the goal is to conserve wild Chinook and Willapa Bay, it seems like the only possible stock that there might be a residual natural origin genetic, you know, relatively pristine genetic situation in the Chinook population, and we should answer that question. I've been calling for that since I first got on the ad hoc Willapa Bay committee. There's been no progress. I think if it's not been done by now, we should put something in the policy where we're going to evaluate that stock. And if it is indeed independent genetic population, then we need to focus our conservation efforts first and foremost in North River, because we're trying to adapt a natural origin stock in these rivers where there's obviously been huge hatchery integration, but we may have a pristine stock in the north part of the bay. And so that, I think, needs to be answered. And if it looks like the rest of the bay, it's just a mongrelized stock, okay, we don't have to worry about it so much. But if it is pristine, then we need to protect that first and foremost. The other thing I would suggest, in the public comment, it came up that there was a lot of heartburn or concern about the economics of hatchery surpluses. One of the ad hoc committee members put together an analysis of that, and I requested a couple of meetings ago that maybe the commission should charge Fish and Wildlife staff with evaluating the economics of hatchery surpluses. I think that, you know, that is an important point. There's obviously a lot of concern about that on both sides of the equation in terms of the recreational and the commercial fishers. And so having WDFW staff sort that out, I think, is worthwhile. And then finally, I would just like to make a quick comment about the process. I certainly would commend Fish and Wildlife staff for their transparency and openness in all this process, but I don't feel like the ad hoc committee has really been utilized to its full potential. And I recognize that that committee is dysfunctional, especially on the topic of allocation, but it would be nice for the committee members to have seen the information like this prior to today. And that's not just this meeting, it's been every meeting, that the data doesn't show up for evaluation by the ad hoc committee members. It's, you know, it's been a frustrating process. I'll just leave it at that. We could talk more at length if you like. Thanks.
Thank you. Marlissa Duggan. Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Commissioners, Director. Once again, good morning. I'm just a private individual that enjoys fishing Willapa Bay, and I'm going to make my comments rarely narrowly focused. I'm a recreational fisherman. I certainly appreciate the unique value and the potential for diverse use of all that resource. There's lots of potential there. It's value to many users in its whole. I'm just speaking as a recreational fisherman that's interested in fishing the marine waters. I'm a small boat fisherman. I've considered Willapa Bay for years to be the best marine opportunity for Chinook salmon for the small boat angler in the state. It's been a destination fishery for myself for a number of years. From Marysville, I come down and fish with my son, his children. In fact, my highlight of last year's fishing was on Willapa Bay, where my oldest grandson caught his first Chinook. That, you know, all the fishing I did and the many wonderful fish I caught, that by far was the most valuable fish caught. That small boat recreational fishery is a huge priority for me, and I think suspect for many folks. That fishery for the small boat angler is dependent on fishing the north part of the bay, essentially that part of Willapa Bay east of Tokelen, fishing the old Willapa Channel. That's where the fish returning to the Willapa hatchery and some of the other fish concentrate. If decisions made to this change where that fishery is going to take place, because of the location of boat launches and other and weather conditions, you'll change the very nature of that fishery from something other than a small boat fishery. And again, as I said, I think that's unique. One of the things that jumped out at me on Mr. Thiefeld's graph, when I was looking at the funding for the monitoring, I noticed that there was a substantial or significant chunk of funding coming from DJ funds. If I remember correctly, DJ is mostly an excise tax collected on recreational sales and reallocated back to the states by licenses sold, which in this state is dominated primarily by recreational dollars. I have to wonder about whether it's appropriate to be using Dingell Johnson money to monitor commercial fisheries unless we can provide some linkage to direct benefits to the recreation committee if that's the folks that are generating the money. I have some experience in conservation goals and developing those, and just a comment. Almost universally success in establishing meaningful and long-term success in conservation goals is information-driven. The better information you have, the better decisions you make. The better informed decision you make, your likelihood of success increases exponentially. I don't know if we have enough information to make those decisions, and if it means delaying some decisions to make sure you have better information, it's certainly, in my opinion, something well worthwhile. That doesn't mean you can't proceed with allocation discussions, and I would encourage you to do that. And thank you for your time.
Mr. Norm Reinhart. Ms. Duggan.
Good morning, Commissioners. Director Unsworth, it's nice to meet you this morning. Thank you. My name is Marlisa Dugan. I am a member of the Willapaw Advisory Committee also, and I can share Brian's comments that it's frustrating not to get the information until we get here. It's very difficult for us to digest that and provide meaningful comment without getting it beforehand. It would be nice in the future if they could change that policy. As you know, I have testified before, and I sit as a recreational advocate both for freshwater and marine fishing. I have to say that I can support either the Willapaw or the Nacelle as primary, but I do have concerns moving for the Willapaw as primary and changing the South Bay primarily for commercial fishing and that early dip in fisheries that happens with 2N and 2M being the consolidated area where the commercial fisheries are, that if we put all of their boats in there together, that we may well wipe out the current active recreational fishery that we have on the North Nemer River at this time. As you know, and I'd just like to review, the North Nemer River, it sits quietly between the Willapaw and the Nacelle. The Nemer Hatchery sits only 2 miles from the mouth of the bay. This short distance allows the returning salmon to flow in and out of the lower tidal water of the river, providing excellent fishing for the freshwater anglers. Freshwater catch record data shows for Chinook in 2011, 2012, and 2013 that more than half of the total freshwater catch for the entire bay is currently utilized by the North Nemer River fishermen. I provided a document that you should have that will be sent to you. I propose that 2015 can create additional opportunities for freshwater anglers by, one, reopening currently closed water on the Nemer and the Nacelle River, both. It's a small thing to do. It doesn't cost us any money. And we can lengthen the freshwater opportunity by reducing their commercial activity in 2N in August and early September. We don't have to eliminate it, but we certainly have to work together because what we used to see with Chinook pouring into the river in late July and early August, we don't see it now until the end of August. And that's because of that early dip in fishery that they so dearly want to hang on to and to expand. So please be cautious with allowing additional time with the commercial fisheries that we don't wipe out something that's already great. Everyone complains that it's broken. Well, it's not broken on the Nemer, and I'd like to make sure that we don't do things that break it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Hamilton next. Mr. Reinhart.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioners, and I'd like to welcome our new director, Mr. Unsworth. Thank you for coming to Washington State. Good luck. You know, I just finished my income taxes for last year, and I may be sitting on too many advisory committees because my commitment to recreational fishing meant that I traveled over 4,000 miles and attending advisory committee meetings. And I want to make that clear that my commitment runs very deeply for recreational fishing. I come here as a member of the Willapa Advisory Committee to express my own opinions based on the input from other recreationalists that I talk with. Next, I would like to thank the WDFW staff from Region 6 and those from Olympia for the Herculean effort that they have put forth in trying to craft a policy for Willapa Bay. I do thank them. Crafting this policy is a challenge, to say the least. I feel that there is little to no majority consensus within the advisors, that this has been a very contentious debate. The potential for litigation does exist. Whatever decision is made here will not, in this policy, satisfy all users. This issue has become politically sensitized, as I'm sure you're all well aware of by now. The very nature and the interpretation of HSRG and hatchery reform are being questioned with potential far-reaching effects here at Willapa. What occurs here can be used as a springboard in all areas of hatchery reform. I believe it takes away the flexibility that the department needs within the framework of hatchery reform to manage recovery, conservation, and harvest responsibly. For these challenges, I ask the Commission to make a decision on the proposed Willapa policy only after WDFW staff have fully vetted all issues, and this will take time. I do not believe rushing this process to have it in place for North of Falcon 2015 is in the best interest of the citizens of Washington State. Please do not rush this process. Let's make sure that the policy that we will be put in place fairly serves all the citizens of Washington. In my last comment, in terms of recreational opportunity, the question has come about, how do you go to 125% when you have what some folks call a full recreational offensive going on at Willapa? I think the answer to that's very simple, and I believe that's something the commission was looking at, and that is, it's not about the amount of fish that each fisherman catches. It's about reinventing salmon fishing, pulling in new participants, and revitalizing those folks like myself who are old and gray and fat to be able to participate in a protected fishery for Chinook that's meaningful. That means they might catch a fish. We can increase the number of fishermen on the Willapa. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reinhart. Ross Barkhurst is next. Mr. Hamilton.
Good morning, Commissioners and Director Dunsland. Haven't met you yet. My name is Dave Hamilton. I would like to thank you for providing time for the citizens to address the issue of the Willapa management policy. The two issues I would like to bring to your attention are seldom discussed but always present. First, I would bring your attention to the issue of stream and stock designations. Within HSRG, you have stream designations, primary, contributing, stabilizing, and stock designations of integrated and segregated. All have very definite definitions of the meaning of the designations. Nearly 10 years ago, after the development of HSRG, a WDFW Science Division staffer put it to me, to my team this way, rules are rules, you do not pick and choose, it is not multiple choice. Okay? This is what myself, my team was taught by WDF and W staff, but it appears the present agency staff feels otherwise. The agency position as presented thus far in the Willapa appears to be that WDF and W staff believe they can assign the most convenient designation of a stream to allow the largest hatchery production. Additionally, as an option C, staff apparently feel they can classify stocks such as a nacelle segregated even fails to meet the standards for a segregated stock and then harvest the stock to that designation. Words do or are supposed to have a very definite meaning, so do the words in HSRG mean what is written or they open to whatever interpretation is needed to allow the largest hatchery production and harvest. I firmly believe this issue needs to be directly addressed by the commission. You're the only ones that can make the decision, folks. It's yours to do. Okay. The second issue is simply the misrepresentation of the conflict over the harvest of hatchery production between recreational and commercial harvesters. Several times in the process, the commercial representatives have stated that the local legislators would not support hatchery production if the commercials did not get the vast majority of harvest. I guess one can view it that way if they so desire, but frankly, it matters little to the recreational fisher. For many years, in particular since 2010, the recreational fisher has had little access to these hatchery fish as the agency has utilized a massive gill netting effort, removing the vast majority of the hatchery production. Additionally, recreational seasons and bag limits were constructed in such a way as to severely limit the recreational anchor success and further enable greater commercial harvest. So, commissioners, these are the facts as I see it. WDF&W can cut hatchery production in the Willapa estuary 60% or more, and the recreation will not see much of a difference, period. Each year, WDF&W spends hundreds of thousands of dollars for the Willapa hatchery production that is in reality, a massive subsidy for the commercial gillnet fleet. Twice in the process, a commercial fisher has testified they do not make enough money to afford fuel for a one-hour run down the bay outside 2T. It is time to ask the question, why is WDFW spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for a commercial fishery that is not really viable, but rather a massive subsidy for commercial getting paid for by recreational dollars? In the recent resolution, the commission has stated this will not be the case in the future and recreational license dollars will not be used to support commercial hatchery production. So again, we have an issue. It's the commission's to decide. Honestly, folks, the recs have not gotten near that pool of fish. It's been taken by the commercials. So if your problem is that hatchery production, understand, the recs have never got it anyway. And so this is between you folks and the commercial fisheries. The recs have been kind of shoved out of it all along. Okay?
Thank you.
And I thank you for your time.
Alan Hollingsworth. Mr. Parkhurst.
Thank you. Again, we are looking at some brand new information here and so have to make preliminary comments. That's a problem. Some of the proposals up there, Steve didn't mention, were the proposals of 18 people put together. It wasn't one person. this is what some of us have seen since this process started. The option being recommended by Region 6 is what I call the have your cake and eat it too option. But if you're commercial, you get the cake. If you're recreational, you get the crumbs. It's designed to throw away the largest spawning river for Chinook and move hatchery production out of the recreational priority area. And do so by calling that river the lowest category. And then at the end we heard about, well, sometime in the next 20 years we'll look about maybe we'll do some hatchery reform and maybe that river can actually start producing some natural spawning fish again. Just got to look at this today, but it has the odour of business as usual for the last 20 years. Think we can do a lot better than that. Option C looks a lot better than that. Hatchery reform needs to be now, not later. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person up will be Tim Hamilton. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I have a question that needs to be answered. You have a fall Chinook egg take last fall. Are these fish going to be raised and released later this year? Or are they going to be destroyed? If they're raised and released, then we have to add another year or two to the transitional period because you're going to have an extra year's worth of fish out in the ocean coming back to over spawn with the wild fish. on Wild Coho. I see in this new presentation you're going to have most of them is 250% or greater spawning, above spawning goal. Well, when you have too many, you release, or you reduce your productivity of with one spawner, you get less back than you do if you have too many. So I think you need to be harvesting more of the wild coho to keep it down below at least 20,000. And the hatchery run timing on coho has been moved forward over the last several years about 2 weeks, and this overlaps a lot of the Chinook run. If you're going to have mostly a coho fishery for the commercials, then you need to try to move that back till most of the hatchery coho doesn't come back until after the 15th of September when the fisheries are going to be opened. And it seems to me that most of the burden on conservation of the wild fish is going to be put on the commercial fisheries in the future. On coated wire tags, I've done some investigating, and the fish, one of the fish buyers that I know of, and maybe two fish buyers, puts all the fish in one tote and are not separated by catch area. And when the department checks the coated wire tags, they see it comes from Tokeland. They think they all come from the same area, which, in fact, they could come from either three or four areas. And when the department puts these tags in the model run, you're not getting a true evaluation of where the fish is actually caught compared to where they say they're being caught. And I also think that the cost that WDF is charging the commercials is some of that cost would have to be, if the commercials is eliminated, there's a lot of that cost going to be charged to the sports, because I think it's all charged to the sports and not, or the commercials, and not divided up between the two. A lot of your stream surveys and it looked to me like all the hatchery production was put against the commercials and that kind of things. And one last comment. According to the computer yesterday, we had 67,305 surplus coho in the Willapaw Basin last year. That, to me, that's kind of a waste of opportunity to harvest for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Lance Gray next. Mr. Hamilton.
Yes. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy, and I sit on the ad hoc. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. We had an interesting thing happen. We got the notion that we might be able to put together the wide, broad spectrum of people and put them in one room and try to get some kind of an idea of where they were coming from. The department's tried this. It's failed miserably because we have polarization of differences between the recreational and commercial fleet, basically. We've tried to stay out of the allocation fight. Can't do it. Won't be done. Impossible to do. Okay? So we tackled it. And we were remarkably surprised. We had to look at, and I chaired this meeting. It's a very interesting meeting. And we had to look at how we dug the hole. 2004, hatchery HSRG said cut your hatchery production from 5 million to 2.5 million, something like that, to protect the wall spawning stocks. They didn't do it. They went to 2007. They jumped it from 5 to 7. We're back here today in front of you under aspirational goals to go from 7 to 9. Now, this is how we got here, hammering these fish with the fleet, 90% of Chinook, 90% of coho, 99% of chum, wouldn't do a net. Now, when we tried to enthusiastically catch all those hatchery fish, we wiped out our spawners. So the cure is to do what? Grow more hatchery fish, increase the harvest. How does that recover natural spawning? Physically impossible. So what we came up with was 7 resolutions we passed. A lot of them are reflected in here, including the allocation of 50, 70, and 90. These guys were all the rec community, and it was tough. But they actually came back and said, we'll give parity because we know we're going to be limited by the ability to kill the natural spawners. It's the NOS, not the number of hatchery fish. If we truly are going to do what we said we were going to do, the limiter is the hatchery, is the NOS. Parity for Chinook, 70% to the fleet for coho, 90% on the chum. This was hard for these people, but we did it. And one of the reasons we went parity was to provide the commercial opportunity to evolve into selective fishing. We heard this. Makes sense. I'm a small businessman. Want to let them go? Want to have them invest in selective gear? You got to give them time on the water. I was really pleased that they responded to that. More to come. It is possible that we can save the day here. But first and foremost, I asked you one time, is Willapaw in the state of Washington? And I asked you again, did you really mean we're going to manage for natural spawners and install hatchery reform? Or are we just going to call a pig a racehorse? I hope that's not that way. Thank you.
Jack Hollingsworth and Andy Mitme. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Good morning, commission members. I've already sent my written comments in. I hope you've looked at them on the draft policy. We have some new ideas to go over here when we get time. But first, I want to hit on a couple of things that my brother mentioned. The coded wire tag data is flawed, I believe. The reasons he stated, fishermen come in and deliver their fish from various areas. We're required to make a fish receiving ticket stating the area. That's done. But the fish all go in the same totes. So when they sample the fish, they can't tell where that fish was harvested. My second point is about the punch card system that we have now. I believe in the policy we should have a more accurate system developed for the to accurately count the sport catch. I believe it's thousands of fish off. Nobody is required to return a punch card. So they get lost. They forget to turn them in. On your hunting license, you're required to send in a report, or you're charged an additional $10 when you buy your tags the next year. Something like that needs to be implemented to get those cards back so we can accurately count how many fish are being caught. Another thing about the sports catch, to increase that, if you don't have a boat on the Willapaw system, you're very limited on catching a fish. The Willapaw River, North River, is completely closed. The logging companies won't let you in, except during hunting seasons. The Nema, you can't get on it. The Nacelle, I used to steal that fish hit. It's probably 10% of the area I used to fish is open to the general public. So unless you have a boat, you're not going to increase your catch on the Willapaw. And on this economic report, it says here that the economic impact per trip for a sport fisherman in the marine area is $96.29. Ask Andy. I wish I could fish for $100 a day. I can't do it. Gas, nets, and everything is way more than that. So I think the economic impact for the commercial person is estimated way low. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Steve Gray. Mr. Mitby?
Commissioners, I would accept or push for the Willapaw as the primary. That would allow access towards the two hatcheries in the southern end of the bay for both recreational and commercial fishermen. The dip-in fishery is a very viable fishery. You've heard that in the NEMA, so we've got a lot of new information to digest today, so let's just go on what we've heard. Well, we don't see any early fish in July and early August in the NEMA. Well, I guess we can't blame that on the commercial fishery. We're not fishing yet. So we're going to have to blame that, I guess, would be on the recreational fishery. But they do show up in the end of August. That is after our commercial fishery. So there are plenty of fish getting by with our current fishery. You just heard one gentleman state he considers this the best fishery in the state recreationally. Well, there's also a commercial fishery going on currently. Okay, we can coexist. Okay, the conflict is their perception. Okay, and one last thing. You should listen to Norm. This policy is moving way too fast to get it correct if you want to have this done before North of Falcon. You should take your time on this. As we already have, we've already moved it forward 2 months. I do not believe that 2 months you will have a proper idea of what to move forward with. And the commercial fishery right now is a viable fishery. If you cut our time, maybe it will be a viable, maybe it won't. But without time on the water, it cannot be a viable fishery. Thank you.
Thank you. Francis Esolila.
Steve Gray, commercial fisherman on the Willapaw for over 45 years. One of the owners of probably the largest major cannery in the area. I'm just going to take a couple of shots at a couple of things here. Like, we talk about the economic study. You know, when we take those salmon in and we dress them and ice them and put them in a box, send them off to a restaurant, I think of the economic value when all of a sudden that guy puts that fish into 8 or 10 ounce servings. That 20-pound fish becomes quite a few servings, $20, $25. The economic way you have evaluated this is not showing the whole picture. I want to spend a minute on one subject, and I hope you can we'll look at this honestly and fairly, and that's handling mortality. I don't know if anybody's really gone through this with you folks. You make the decisions. Columbia River, a number of years ago, went into a handling mortality, spent more than $1 million. They did it on spring salmon below Bonneville Dam. They used 8-inch mesh, and they used a 4-and-a-quarter-inch mesh. The 8-inch mesh, they determined that the handling mortality was 45%. The 4-and-a-quarter-inch mesh, they determined it was like 18%. National Marine Fisheries came up to the thing shortly and said, wait a minute, you didn't do it fairly. You took the control group out of the top of the ladder at Bonneville Dam. It needs to go back downstream several miles, just like the net fishery did, so that all the fish are subject to the same thing. They did it over, and it came out to be 40% and 14% instead of 45 and 17, 18. The states of Oregon and Washington have used 40% with 8-inch gear ever since then. Willapaw, did they adapt that? Did you folks adapt that to Willapaw? No. We used the 45. We never adjusted to it. Then all of a sudden, with a lawsuit, someone decides we're going to come in and we're going to restudy Willapaw. We gave each of the would-be scientists $5,000. No study, no real information looked at, just their own feeling. One of the things they came up and said is, well, you got grass. We're going to add 10%. One of the things about grass, Miss Wecker has done a wonderful job eradicating Spartina. She and a good friend of mine, Dr. Patton. Spartina was a problem to our fishery because it's kind of a tube-type grass, about 5-6 feet long. It would tangle up in your net. They have eradicated thousands and thousands of acres. So a lot of the grass is not there. And when you look at the grass situation, if there is grass there, it's in your cork line. Chinook salmon are in your lead line. No conflict, shouldn't be any adjustment at all, but this was a way to change our percentage from what would be 40% upward. Then all of a sudden they said somebody told them that they saw a commercial fisherman throw a fish overboard. You can catch a dog shark, and when you're going to get it out of the boat, you're not going to drop it back in front of the net to go in it. He's going to mouth your gear and tear it and cut it up. You're going to throw him out in the water. Those things happen. What I want to say, is that my buzzer?
Finish your comment.
What a short day. I guess I won't bore you with too much more on that. The thing I want to say is a couple things for you to think about. In the Columbia River study, those fish go hundreds of miles. They go over several dams. They are there for 6 months before they spawn. Willapa, the fish in Willapa go 5 to 15 miles, have 3 weeks, 4 weeks to spawn, have no hydra system. The scientists that we hired and sent you folks a whole rundown on it will tell you that the mortality of handling is less than 40 and certainly less than 65, and that needs to be addressed honestly. If you ever want to call me, we'll give you the whole time, but do.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Bob Lake. Mr. Aaliyah.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak once again. I would have to concede that, as some of the other speakers said earlier, this has been a very contentious, challenging, just difficult thing to get through. Really no consensus, a very dysfunctional ad hoc committee because it is so polarized. But I do have to commend Mr. Hamilton on getting folks together, advisors representing both recreational and conservation. Have come together in support of these seven resolutions, okay? The biggest of which is the 50-70-90 thing, looking at that parity in sharing the available Chinook impact. I wholeheartedly support this, and I think you guys should really take a look at that. So that was outlined in slide number 36 in the presentation. I can still support a primary either way. It's whatever's going to work out best for conservation, what's most achievable. But slide 37 did show that the 50-90, the 50-70-90 plan could result in meeting a lot of our objectives within that 16 to 20 year time frame. So it's doable, and I think it's workable. One last comment, it has to do with a comment made that, gee, it seems like the commercials are really taking the hit here. You know, unfortunately, that's how conservation works. It's going to have to be conservation in proportion to the exploitation that's already happening. And so if 90% of the Chinook impact is being consumed by the commercial fishery, you'd have to think if the conservation were shared in proportion, that they'd be taking 90% of the hit on the conservation as well. So in times of plenty and in times of bad, that's the proportional way to do it. And I would conclude my comments with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lake.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. And good morning to our new Director Unsworth. My name is Bob Lake. I am the president of the Willapa Bay Gillnet Association. I'm also on the advisory board group. And I have to agree with a lot of my constituents, especially Mr. Gray, on what happened on the mortality rates. And that's an important issue on our fishery. I'm going to go back and I'm going to cover a couple of things. The dip-in fishery, our summer fishery, actually comes out of the ocean allocation. That's the way it's been set up and run since about 1980. I've fished the Willapa, well, since I was like 2 years old. So, Christ, that's 66 years I fished down there, but commercially only about 40-some. But anyway, the dip-in fishery comes out of the ocean allocation. And we had a little controversy a number of years ago when Joe Blum was a director, and we had to go to court to get our fishery back. And that's what it was. And then also the recreational fishery gets to fish before us. They're fishing in the ocean. They're fishing below us in the Willapa system. And they fish with us if they want to, and they can fish above us. They've got plenty of area, and you can't give them any more time because they've got 7 days a week. Period, starting whenever the ocean opens all the way through January 31st in Willapa Bay. And then the coded wire tag data also showed that the hatchery, or the tag showed up, Forks Creek showed up in Nema and Nacelle at the hatcheries, and Nacelle and Nema fish showed up in the Willapa hatchery. So the stray rate was tremendous. So if you want to go off the coded wire tag data, I think that's rather bogus. Anybody that's real familiar with hatchery fish are well aware of that. And I think U.S. Fish and Wildlife found out when they did the coho study back in the early 90s. North River area, if you guys want to look at North River being a contributing stock, those stocks was brought in and it was put into Fall River in about the 1980s. I know the man that did it, who was head of the hatcheries at that time. They brought stocks in from Three Rivers out of Oregon and California and also out of Puget Sound. So it's an intermingling of stocks. Now, we want to protect that, and if that's what your desire is, we need to shut it down in a lot larger area than what's been shut down for. But we need to have it shut down from the beginning of the season until September 1st. That's the bottom line, because that's when those fish going into North River are there. And that would be from Toke Point all the way up to the lower end of 2U. If we want to truly protect those stocks, that's what it's going to take. Like I say, I've fished that for 66 years now. I used to go across the North River when there was no highway to Raymond. We went across by boat from Toklin. So, and then also, we need, if we're going to harvest these hatchery surpluses, the commercial fishery, we have to fish prior to September 1st. Otherwise, you're going to have a total, you'll be totally just buried in surplus Chinook at the hatcheries. And again, I would ask you to go, Mr. Reinhart, and let's hold off on this Woolapaw policy. Let's get it right. Let's not screw it all up. We've got everybody fighting. And if you guys got any questions about the numbers that the hatchery fish bring in on that, I've got everything right here. So with that, I'll thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. That concludes our Woolapaw briefing and public hearing. Commissioner Wecker.
I think staff wanted us to comment.
Yep.
Now that we've heard the public testimony.
Okay. Commissioner Wecker.
Yeah, I thought the testimony, again, was very informative. Thank you all. You did a great job. And I took down a lot of notes. I don't know if I can get all my questions answered, but some of the key themes that I heard from both sides are you want us to take the time it takes to do a good job, be deliberative, slow the process down if necessary. I think that's an excellent point. I don't want to rush into a policy. I've made the statement in the past that Willapa Bay deserves a very well thought out, scientifically justified, thoroughly vetted policy. So no need from my perspective to rush to judgment here. I think we ought to take the time it takes. And it may be reassuring to people. Now, some of the input I've gotten in the past is that people want us to make a decision soon because you don't believe that we're actually going to make a decision. You think we're just going to kick the can down the street. Well, I can guarantee you we are not going to kick the can down the street just for stalling purposes. It takes up a lot of staff time. It takes up commission time. We don't want to spend any more time, and we also are aware of how much time you all put into this, the meetings, the mileage, the carbon footprint. It's, you know, we get it. We're not, I for one do not want to see this take a minute longer than it should. But that said, we want to do this right. So I would like to see if the public is asking us to slow this down, I'd like to see us figure out a way to give them the assurances that we're not stalling, we're going to get this done. The other factor in my mind is we're about to watch the staff devote most of their time to North of Falcon. That is an immediate necessity. We are not going to get this done before North of Falcon, so we do need to accommodate the redirection of staff time towards the North of Falcon process, which means it's not going to be in March. April is still heavily involved in North of Falcon, so I think we're looking at, we don't have a meeting in May, I think we're looking at June. For adoption at earliest. And I would make that recommendation to the rest of the commission. So that's regarding that. And I don't want to take up all the commission's time, but I was kind of puzzled by the idea that we could increase production and still meet our broodstock management goals? How do we avoid flooding the spawning beds with hatchery fish, given that our weirs aren't working and there's so much spawning habitat below the hatcheries? So can you help me there? Maybe it's a simple answer and I'm just missing it.
It's not a simple answer. We would definitely have to make some improvements to our weir, put some more emphasis on keeping that sound and fish-proof when it needs to be.
Yeah.
We think there are some things we can do, and I know that staff is already preparing to make some modifications to the way the weir is put together to make it more resistant to building up with trash and debris so that it does remain tighter, more fish-proof through the year. But, yes, we'd have to throw some resources at that to try to ensure that we do get those hatchery fish off the spawning grounds.
So have we done an analysis of what the additional production would cost us, in which would have to include weirs and...
We did look at just the cost of production, and off the top of my head, I want to say it's about $170,000. We actually had done that quite a while ago, so I'm a little foggy on what that exact number was.
Okay. I've got some more, but I'll let others have a chance.
Commissioner Benkin.
excuse me. I agree also that we need to delay this process. The process is galloping along, and I concur with Norm Reinhart, with Andy Mitby, and with Bob Lake, that this process is going too fast, and I think we really need to involve ourselves in some deep thinking and maybe not so much outside of the envelope process here. I think that there's another thing that also that was said, and it was said by Tim Hamilton, that has something to do with kind of slowing the process down, and that's manage for hatchery reform. Hatchery reform is here to stay. I don't think that we've taken into account hatchery reform when we start trying to reclassify stocks of fish regarding the HSRG process. As a member of the HSRG, a past member of the HSRG, they take it very, very seriously when you classify or try to reclassify the stocks of fish to fit your fishery. And I think that's going to be a real problem. And finally, it's a question for staff: is what are we doing to determine if the North River stock is genetically distinct? Do we have genetic information on that? Are we going forward with that, or do we have past information that shows that it's genetically distinct?
We don't have any current information, Commissioner Mankin. We did send some crews up into the basin last fall, trying to get our hands on some of the adult spawners. They're just so rare, and they wash out fairly quickly into deep holes where they're not accessible. We were unable to find any spawners to grab carcasses or any carcasses to grab genetic samples off of. So we've taken another thought of it of how we could do that, and our intent is to go up and collect some juveniles this winter and get those samples off the juveniles that are being produced. We won't know whether they were from hatchery fish or wild fish. We'll have to see how they key out with genetics. But realizing that we were unable to get any of the carcasses, that was our plan B, I guess, is to go collect the juveniles. So we'll send some folks up with backpack shockers or whatever we need to do and collect some juveniles and get those samples analyzed as quickly as we can.
So I'd like to emphasize then my original point here is I think it's very imperative here that we slow the process down. So I concur with some of the testimony today that emphasizes that.
Mr. Keeney?
I believe I concur with that also, but I remember the feeling of the decisions on Willapa had to be made prior to North of Falcon. I don't understand why that would be. Are we missing anything? Because this is a non-tribal fishery. It's hugely important to the people that are involved, commercial and rec. So I think, you know, waiting till June seems totally logical, or when we have a better chance to figure things out and make sure we've got the right package. I just don't remember why there was such a push to have this done before North of Falcon. Have I missed something? Someone knows?
Step time.
Yeah, it takes a while to go through the process, and if we waited till June to have any direction and then tried to pull our constituents together at that time, I think we would be hard-pressed to complete rulemaking for fisheries beginning in September or even late August. I think from staff's perspective, if we're not going to have a decision in April, I think some guidance for the 2015 North of Falcon process would be extremely helpful, provide some thoughts about how we should be managing for this year, and then whenever the policy is adopted, that would probably be best to be implemented for 2016 so that we can do our preseason planning in perhaps April, May, before you folks have made a decision. So,
Bob, Mr. Keogh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I don't really have anything more to add at this point.
I do.
Other than I do appreciate the time and effort that stakeholders have put into this. This is something that is occupying a lot of the commission's time. I know it is my time, and I know this is very important. And I concur too. I think it's a little bit we have many unknowns. I think as Dr. Mankin, Commissioner Mankin points out, particularly the genetic aspect of a fish in the North River. If we're going to make this, you know, dramatic change in how this fishery operates, we need to have a good idea. Or not a good idea, I mean a pretty sound scientific basis upon which to really change this fishery dramatically for all participants. So,
thank you. I guess I have a few comments, and it may be guidance that some of the people in the audience don't like, but I'm still going to make it. In my day job, I've negotiated just a few things over my career, hundreds if not thousands of them, and it's all about dealing with people. You got to get along with people, especially in an issue like this where you got so damn much passion. You got to dig down, and you got to find a little bit of compromise here for the other stakeholders, and I mean this to both sectors. There's got to be some give and take here. You guys come back to us with something that you can agree on that can pass the red face test based on conservation, that the staff can tell us we'll do what needs to be done. Because otherwise, if that doesn't happen, if there's no agreement from the parties, then we're going to have to make a decision. And in making the decision, we can't make everyone happy no matter what we do. But we want to try and make as many people happy as we can. So please take that and try and figure out a way to understand the other people across the table from you and what their needs are. And let's see if we can't move this thing down the road a little bit. And I also agree with my colleagues, we need a little more time. So please take that for what it's worth.
I'm sorry, can I just want to add, thank you for those comments, Mr. Vice Chair. You know, as some of you know, Larry and I, we've worked together. I'm involved, my organization, in the sockeye and pink fishery in the San Juan Islands, an area that is very near and dear to Mr. Carpenter. And, you know, I started getting involved in this process back in the early 2000s, and I didn't know Larry. I'm an attorney by training, very kind of had that litigation attitude. It's like, I'm going to rip your lungs out if you're going to rip my lungs out. And You know, the big issue there oftentimes is during the August time when the sockeye and pinks are in that area, particularly along the west side of San Juan Island, which is an area that is a huge recreational fishery. And, you know, the commercial fishery does disrupt that fishery. And Larry really, you know, it was hard for him and his constituents. Particularly when we had to open up on a weekend, which really was very, very difficult. But, you know, and to Larry's credit, he realized, and there was some certainly acknowledgement on our part, is like, you know, this is the time when the fish are there. And we have many constraints on that fishery because of, I mean, I won't go into the details, but basically, we have a very limited opportunity to go in there. We can't pick when the fish are there. And to Larry's credit and to others in that area, I think, you know, there's been a mutual, I don't think anybody loves it. They don't like to see a seine fleet on the west side of San Juan Island when they have a vacation planned. But, I just wanted to offer that as an encouragement to you all. And you're not going to come to a meeting of the minds, but to echo Larry's comments, I think it's important that we have some mutual respect, and I'll just leave it at that. So thanks.
Thank you, Bob. Mr. Wecker?
Okay. Some of my other notes, I thought from the testimony that were important to consider adding to our policy. Especially towards the end when we talk about things that we hope to do in the future, which includes looking at more selective fishing techniques and ocean ranching and where we do our hatchery production and planting. We've got that language already in the draft, but I would recommend that we include the evaluation of the North River genetic stocks in that list of things that we'd like to do. I'm not sure we can do it before we make this policy decision without putting off the policy decision for a very, very long time. And then another study that I think would be a good idea to do is the evaluation of the economics of hatchery surpluses. Given that money is tight in state government, we really ought to be looking at whether this is defensible use of public funds. I'm not sure we have an adaptive management provision in our policy. We do. Okay. So that is not necessary to add. So those are some of the things. And maybe I should ask you, how long do you think it would take to do a study of North River? You mentioned some of the challenges of even finding natural spawners to test. So...
Yeah, so juvenile Chinook should be popping up any day if they haven't already, yeah. Although I haven't seen any on the rivers I've been on yet. So we need to get in there very shortly with our gear to collect those. Running the samples doesn't take very long at all if we can collect enough to get a good sample size and have a real firm understanding of what those fish look like. It is difficult to get in there. It's difficult to sample it. We haven't tried to do this on juveniles in the past, so we've got some, there's probably going to be a bit of a learning curve, but we can certainly get some resources headed that direction and try to have those hopefully collected by the end of February or early March.
Okay.
And then perhaps have them analyzed by April.
So it's possible we might have that information before we make a decision here?
Possible, yes. I don't want to provide any guarantees. Fish can be tricky sometimes.
And if not, it goes onto the list of things to be done.
Right.
I would say.
Correct.
Okay. And I just also wanted to say something about the process issues that people brought up, the feelings that you all haven't been able to see this information until our meetings. This has happened previously, too. I remember last meeting, it was hot off the press. There were questions, how come you didn't share this beforehand? Well, it was hot off the press. It had just been generated. And I think that is part of, or maybe the whole of the explanation for this presentation, too. A lot of this information is being developed just the day before the commission meeting. And to make you feel better, the whole idea of extending out this process so that you're now going to have a chance to look at the information that we were presented. We have not seen this before this meeting either. So now you all can look at this. We're not going to make a decision for at least 2 months. And I think it's probably going to be in June. But if it makes more sense to just make that decision that we will delay it until June, I'm prepared to do that. But it allows you all to keep seeing this information. Don't worry that you only get it at our meetings. You're going to still have time to look at it and still have time to comment. That's what I'm saying. So I guess a part of, if I make a motion that we scheduled adoption of this policy in June, it would also include a motion as part of it to provide direction to the department on how to handle North of Falcon this year. When would you need it? By March meeting or April meeting?
April at the very latest. March would be more helpful.
Because we can do that with a conference call, too. And you would just then need to provide us with some guidance about the issues that you need guidance on, the questions, in other words, for us.
Correct. If you recall in our last meeting, then Director Anderson suggested that there are components of the transitional plan that may form a framework for some interim guidance for 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain that we can ponder some of that transitional language and perhaps get it to you folks.
Okay. Well, then I want to make a motion that we schedule the adoption of the Willapa policy for June, no sooner than June, and seek guidance from staff regarding this transitional approach for this season.
I just have a quick question, Mr. Tammy, when's our June meeting? We can talk. I might have certainly I want to be here for that. And I mean, we can work around that, hopefully.
You're not going to be.
Well, I'm.
Is it Disneyland?
I hate to.
You don't have to share the details.
No, it's a family commitment, but we can hopefully work around it.
Okay, we have a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
I second that.
Commissioner Menken seconds a motion. So, with a call for the question, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No. Motion carries?
And just a clarification, so the motion is not to make a determination before June, or is the motion to make it at the June meeting?
I think I said no sooner. In June.
Okay. All right.
I think what it does, it gives the folks in the audience a sense that we've been told numerous times to slow it down. I guess that is the one question of Mr. Scott. Jim, comfort level questions?
Jim Scott,
the fish program, and I think the approach that Commissioner Wecker laid out is a really good one. It will allow the staff to go through our planning process for North of Falcon for 2015 with some good policy direction, and it allows us also the time, as everyone knows we need, to make sure this is the darn best policy that we can. So appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. That concludes agenda item 12.